become a partner with Chuck is a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily those of IRN, its advertisers, or affiliates.
Well, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views. This hour, they're going to be the views of Melody Cederstrom, who's with us, who supports Radio Liberty, and we support her as well. But before we get to Melody, I just wanted to briefly touch on the National Intelligence Estimate that suddenly has transformed America's foreign policy in the Middle East. Up to this time, why President Bush has been telling us that the Iranians were working, going to develop nuclear weapons, going to threaten us, going to threaten Israel, going to threaten the peace of the world. If we didn't stop the Iranians, why we were facing World War III? Of course, it's been my contention that if we attack Iran, why it would precipitate World War III, but that really didn't matter. And then suddenly one day we're told that there's a national intelligence estimate that the president had no idea about, that's been around for at least 6 months or more, that says that Iran isn't working on a nuclear bomb, and suddenly everything has changed, and that they'd given up their plans for a nuclear bomb in the year 2003. And that in 2005, the national intelligence estimate they put out that said Iran was trying to develop a nuclear weapon was false. And what we can trust the one we put out today. And this doesn't make sense. Simply overnight, America's whole foreign policy in the Middle East seems to have changed. And how do you make any sense out of it? Well, let me tell you that Joel Skousen has done an excellent job of that. If you do not take the World Affairs Brief that Joel puts out or listen to the programs, you can listen to his analysis at RadioLiberty.com. My interview with him, it was on Thursday afternoon at 4 o'clock. Get that, go there, listen to it, because basically he says, look, this whole thing is as phony as a $3 bill. There's no question that Iran is trying to build nuclear weapons. Why would they be trying to enrich uranium? They can buy enriched uranium for their nuclear for their nuclear plants from Russia. In fact, that's what they've done. They're ready to start a nuclear plant and get the fuel rods from Russia. So why are they doing all the enriching? Of course they're trying to develop a nuclear bomb. But the whole idea has changed. Everything has changed. He really believes it's partly because of the fear that if we were to get into a war with Iran right now, our already weakened dollar would collapse. Secondly, why it would strengthen the candidacy of Ron Paul, who the establishment fears a great deal, that there might be somebody who really believed in the Constitution who would be nominated for the Republican candidacy for the presidency. And so they've decided to put this whole thing on hold. And really, this goes right along with what Daniel Estulin, who wrote a book on the Bilderbergers. It sold over 1.5 million copies elsewhere throughout the world. They couldn't find, well, they could only find one publisher in the United States, a very small publisher, Chris Milligan, who's a friend of ours, to put out the book on the Bilderbergers. But what Daniel Estulin said was at the Bilderberger meeting, which was just a month or two ago in Spain. The Bilderbergers decried there is not going to be an invasion of Iran at this time. That was their official statement. Now, the book is available through Radio Liberty. My interviews are available through Radio Liberty. I want you to know that there are forces behind the scenes that really run the world, and certainly President Bush is simply a figurehead. Understand, ladies and gentlemen, that If you don't believe that there really are these forces, go to lucistrust.org. That's their website, with offices in New York, in Geneva, in London, and financed by some of the wealthiest people in the world. Why, this is the group that really runs things behind the scenes. And, of course, they used to be known as the Lucifer Publishing House. But, they're Luciferians. That's what it's all about. Well, hi, Melody. How are you doing tonight?
Well, good evening, Dr. Stan. I'm doing fine, and I hope you're doing well.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm a lot better than I was a few weeks ago.
Well, that's wonderful.
Anyway, we're just thankful we're back to 5 hours a day on the radio, and really, these are such exciting times. Let's get your impression of what's going on financially in the world today.
Well, I do have a question on you. When you were talking about Iran, you talked about our foreign policy changing. With all the information that's just come out, does it change Israel's policy?
Absolutely not. In fact, Israel says that Iran is working very rapidly to have a nuclear bomb. They'll have one very, very shortly. And Israel may very well in a few months from now, attack Iran, and that will draw us into a war with Iran. But at least it's not going to happen for the time being.
And do you think that has anything, could it coincide with, I believe, and I'm not a military person, but I believe next week Kosovo declares their independence, and there's also a possibility of something breaking out in that region.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. There may very well be a war in Kosovo. It won't be a large one. It won't drag the whole world into the into confrontation. But basically, if the Serbians resist Kosovo independence, Serbia will have the backing of Russia. And believe me, what we would be looking at is the possibility of certainly the Serbians being simply an extension of Russia, and the Kosovo independence movement being an extension of the United States. And you'd see these two forces really battling one another, but they would simply be fronts for both Russia and the United States. But I don't think this is going to lead to a world war, at least not just yet.
Okay. Interesting. A lot of interesting things going on around the world, and of course, everything that goes on around the world reflects the prices of gold. And we had gold trading in a range this past week between 785 and 811. And we also had silver trading from about 1398 to about 1469. So they're both doing very well. They're both maintaining a great level. And with everything that's going on, I don't believe anything is really getting any better. None of the problems are being addressed. And, of course, that all puts pressure on the financial markets. And, again, that's positive for gold. So if people haven't had an opportunity to purchase their gold yet, or they need to put some of those U.S. dollars, those declining U.S. dollars, into gold, they can give us a call.
All right, fine. And do you want to? We'll get your telephone number out here just a little bit later. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Melody Cederstrom. And Melody is simply pointing out that the dollar continues to weaken. The international financial situation is still uncertain. Gold is trading in the range of the high 700s, well up into about 811 this last week. Silver is actually doing quite well. Certainly they're not losing any value, and the reason they're not losing any value is because the dollar is losing value, and when the dollar loses value, then the fixed value of both gold and silver come forward. And I think people have to understand that the whole world financial system is on the verge of collapse. I think it was very interesting this last week that Henry Paulson, the Secretary of the Treasury, of course he's really from Goldman Sachs, he's representing the international financiers, but Paulson has said that the companies that have lent money to these people who can't pay their loans, they've got alternative rate mortgages, and suddenly now it's time for the mortgage rates to be adjusted. And so he's saying that all of these companies should just freeze their interest rates for 5 years. That's going to solve the problem. But Is it really going to solve the problem? Why would these companies, which are going to have to borrow money at a fairly high interest rate and then lend it out at a lower interest rate, how can companies do that? But what nobody talks about is so many of these collateralized debt obligations, these mortgage bonds that they've created, are held by other countries. They're held in England. They're held certainly in the Far East. They're held in the Near East. They're held in Europe. Are all those companies going to freeze their interest rates so people do not have to renegotiate their loans? And of course they're not going to do that. I mean, the idea that this is going to solve the problem seems ridiculous. What do you think, Melody?
Well, I agree.
Melody, are you there? Well, I hope that I heard a little click there. Well, but I don't know.
Yeah, I know. We got a little disconnected there for a moment.
All right, fine. Go ahead.
I believe the only thing they're doing is buying time. I don't think it's going to do anything. And I mean, even if they would go through with this, I think it would upset a lot of people. It's certainly rewarding people who made bad decisions, not only in the personal level, the consumer level, but also the lenders and everything. So they're rewarding bad practice instead of the people who make good decisions and try to do the right thing. They're being penalized. So I don't think it's going to work, and it would bother a lot of people because a lot of people have gone through troubled times during their lifetime, and they've never been bailed out. So, again, I think if they do this, and it's never worked, whenever there's been freezes on any type of system, it just doesn't work. And I think it just it buys them time, and they're only trying. They will do what they have to do in order to protect their back pockets so they can get all their financial problems in order so they don't get hit as bad. And I guess and when it comes to the declining dollar, it's absolutely right. I mean, this is worldwide. I mean, all the central banks will be lowering their interest rates to aid their systems just to keep everything from going. And it just relates to very high inflation, monetary inflation, price inflation. And that just means the U.S. dollar will continue to break down.
And I think this is really what's so important. But they keep telling us there's no inflation. Well, now they say, well, yes, the inflation may be 3.5% or 4%, but that's really not too bad. And, there's a danger of inflation in the future, but it's not here now. And, of course, they're simply lying to us. Of course inflation is here now. You've got to be an idiot if you go into the grocery store and you look at the prices and you tell me there's no inflation. I mean, go to your local service station and buy a gallon of gasoline. Tell me there's no inflation. Certainly the prices of fuel have gone up over 45% this past year. And that is, of course, carried forward into everything that is shipped. The price of diesel has gone up far more than the price of gasoline, where there's no reason at all. It's much easier to refine diesel than gasoline. But here's a wonderful opportunity to make hundreds of billions of dollars, which the oil companies are really doing. Fabulous profits. But they cannot, of course, they're not going to tell the American people that, because the oil companies and the current administration, certainly the Brotherhood of Darkness we talk about, they all interlock. Banking, oil, and certainly these people who control both political parties. So we have inflation here, and with inflation means the progressive destruction of the value of our currency. That means anybody who has an insurance policy is going to get cheated when, of course, they get payout from the insurance company. The same thing holds true with pensions. The same thing holds true if you have your money in treasury bonds. I mean, you may be getting a 4% interest on your treasury bonds, but you're losing the value of the money there by about 11% a year, because certainly reliable people are telling us the real inflation rate, which the government denies and is lying about, is about 11% a year, and will probably be far higher next year, based upon the calculations of M3, which the government will no longer release because they don't want the American people to know what's really going on. So, certainly, what's the government doing? Well, the government is pouring out all sorts of additional money, diluting the money supply, trying to lower the interest rates, trying to keep the economy going simply by flooding it with currency, and it's happening not only here in the United States but throughout the world. And what you're seeing is the demise of the current monetary system, and with that will go the savings of most Americans. And what we're looking at is the impoverishment of the people in this country, just as the policies we imposed upon Russia in the 1990s, 1992, 93, 94, destroyed the life savings of the Russian people. So the same thing is happening in the United States. Go right ahead, Melody.
Yes, it is. And, you know, with all the reports that come out of Wall Street and out of Washington, it just confuses people with the lies and the misrepresentation of all these reports. Because when you have confusion, when people are told one thing and something else is happening to them, they have this confusion, and what happens is they don't do anything because they're confused and they don't know what to do. So they wait. They wait to see what happens. And again, this is buying time for them in order to do what they have to do to keep this going on as long as possible. And they do that by just continuing to pour money, as you said, into the system to keep things going. But as that continues, you're going to see more and more countries. You're going to see more and more areas where they want to loosen their ties to the dollar. And people have to remember that each time we see, you know, when we talk about the declining value of the dollar, every time they get a paycheck, their paychecks are devalued also, just along with those dollars. And sometimes we don't associate that to our back pockets, of course, until we go to the store and, you know, we pay three times what we paid a year ago. In fact, I just received my new billing for my health insurance, and it went up $500 a quarter. And I just couldn't believe it. It went up $2,000 a year. Now tell me there's no inflation in this country.
There's no inflation in this country. We know that because the president insists there is none. And the president wouldn't lie to the American people,
absolutely
would he?
Absolutely not.
Oh, I mean, ladies and gentlemen, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, don't be bashful. You can call us at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Inflation is rampant, but they don't want you to know. So they believe if they keep telling you over and over and over again there's no inflation, you're going to believe it. We'd like to know. Give us a call. What do you think about the inflation rate in our society today? What do you think about the fact that the Federal Reserve System, instead of doing what should be done, and that is at this time they should be raising interest rates to try to preserve the dollar, instead of that they're lowering interest rates, and not only that, but they're releasing massive amounts of money into the economy just to keep it going, because unfortunately credit is drying up. Banks don't want to lend to other banks. Banks are reluctant to lend for development unless you have somebody with a tremendous credit rating. And the old idea is the only time you can really borrow money from a bank is when you don't need it. And increasingly this is happening. And the old idea that the function of the Federal Reserve System is to take away the punch bowl just when the party gets interesting. In other words, dampen the enthusiasm, dampen the good times, because the good times are built upon a fiat money system that will eventually collapse if it's not kept under control. And they're not keeping it under control today. That is the great tragedy. So, certainly, Melody, as you're talking to your clients, what's the impression you're getting from them? Are they concerned about the progressive drop in the value of the dollar, the fact that the dollar has lost at least 10% of its value just within the last 3 or 4 months and almost 40% of its value in the last 3 years?
Absolutely, they're concerned, and because things get tougher and tougher for them. You know, they have families, the jobs anymore, they're concerned about losing their jobs, they're concerned about what items are costing. You know, just like, so as things increase, as food increases, as their normal daily living expenses increase, they have to compensate somehow. And I think we're beginning to see that compensation through the car loans. We're beginning to see a higher delinquency in car loans. They still need a roof over their head, but yet their car is something that they don't make their payments on to pay for their homes.
Well, of course, the actually car sales are down. General Motors car sales are down. Ford sales are down. They're actually going to begin cutting back on production, next year, simply because the sales have been so poor here. Certainly, Toyota is probably holding up fairly well, but people don't have the money for buying all the new cars that they have in the past. So, certainly, our entire industrial base, not just cars, but everything, is beginning to go into a slump. Well, Melody, go ahead and pick up the story there.
Well, what's interesting about these auto loan defaults, usually they do tend to be event-driven, whether it be by higher inflation, but usually...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mined supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iOtterol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
paying for wars, they wouldn't be happy. And of course, that's exactly what's happening today. George Bush gave us a tax cut. He is financing this war by borrowing money from the future. The federal debt is well over $9 trillion today. It's increased over $4 trillion just since George Bush became president. And, of course, the real debt, as you know, is closer to $50 to $60 billion when you take in $50 to $60 trillion when you take into account the Social Security and Medicare trust funds that have been expended. We're stealing the money out of the Social Security and Medicare trust funds to finance the war. So you're absolutely right, Ed. Melody, do you have any thoughts on what Ed was saying?
No, I don't. But eventually, the taxes, and it's the people who end up paying the debt anyway. So
amen,
it's just
that.
at a later time, and not associated with what's really going on with the financing of the war, or the borrowing the funds.
In fact, it was really so interesting. Those, if you read my newsletters, I was simply quoting Congressman Ron Paul when he interviewed Alan Greenspan on the 20th of July, 2005. And he pointed out that since 1971, the Federal Reserve System, has increased the amount of money in circulation 12 times and increased the federal debt 19 times over. So, you know, they're in the process of destroying us by debt. And it's happened time and time again throughout history. It happened in ancient Venice. It happened in ancient Florence. It happened in ancient France, both in the early 1700s and late 1700s. It happened in Russia and Germany and Argentina. It's happening right now in the United States. And the average American has no glimpse of what's happening. Anything else you want to say, Ed?
Well, when Adam Smith made this comment, he was talking about a sovereign developing a taste for borrowing. It looks to me like our whole government is acting as an oligarchy, which is really sovereign.
You're absolutely right.
Okay. So that's about all that I have to say.
Thanks very much for calling, Ed.
Thank you, Ed.
Thank you.
And let's go to Peter calling from Salinas. And again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Do you honestly believe that inflation is 2% or maybe even 3 or 4%? I mean, look at the cost of health care. Look at the cost of fuel. Look at the cost of food. And understand the government is simply lying to us. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And right now we have Peter calling from Salinas. Hi, Peter.
Good evening, Dr. Stan and Melody. Might I put in on the plumbing and electrical report. This 2% thing makes me laugh because copper pipe and copper wire has doubled in the last 5 years while we, the installers, have seen our wages go flat.
Right.
So when everybody's talking about 2%, they're not talking about copper pipe, they're not talking about copper wire.
And they're not talking about what's happening to food or fuel or health care or so many of the other things. They're simply, well, let's call it what it is. They're lying to us.
They are, absolutely. And Melody, it's so great to hear your voice clearly state what, again, the corporate media in the financial sections refuse to report. And Dr. Stan, for the working guys out there, we see it. The material we're putting into these people's houses, which has now gone flat, has doubled while we're sitting here watching our wages do nothing, do absolutely nothing. And they try to tell us that this inflated currency we have is great because it makes our debt look small. How crazy is that?
We live in a world gone mad, Peter. There's only a few of us who are sane, and
no. Everybody
thinks that we're crazy.
No, Dr. Stan, I refuse to accept that. I can only accept that you and Melody and the other people that call in, I can't accept an insane world. I can only accept that hardworking, hard-thinking people speak what's best for America.
Amen to that.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. Thank you, Melody.
Thank you, Peter.
Thanks for calling, Peter. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. I'd like to know what you think about the 2% inflation that they claim that we have. Do you honestly believe that they're telling you the truth? And if you don't, what are you going to do about it? Well, Cynthia, we'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest, Melody Cederstrom, and right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Melody sells gold and silver, and has a chance to talk to people from all across the country. And of course, she lives back in Pennsylvania, so she knows what's happening in that part of the country. So what's your take on what's happening now? Certainly, I know you live in a college town, so that you have a fairly stable economy there, but what about Pennsylvania as a state? Are they on sound financial footing, and what about your customers? What do they tell you?
Well, not at all. As much as they talk about job increases, there's a lot of people who have been hurt. You go into some of these rural areas where they had manufacturing or businesses, and where they pulled up and left and closed the doors. There's towns that were once productive are now turning into the ghost towns that we so often talked about in the West. I remember coming back from driving home from Lancaster, where my family lives. There's a town you go through, Steelton, where, you know, of course it's got its name through the steel industry and even the Bethlehem of Steel. And I mean, they're just broken down buildings and broken windows and just towns of nothing. So it's still there. It's happening. They cover it up. You know, they try to change these buildings into, you know, craft stores and restaurants and things like that. But a lot of people have been hurt. They haven't have been able to recuperate from their loss of jobs. You know, again, they had jobs where they were paid well, at least a living wage, where they could live. And now they're reduced to, you know, barely minimum wage, and they're working many more hours. And again, you know, you're beginning to hear the word productivity crop up in every word's mouth. So the American worker is working harder and harder. So, yes, I live in a college town, but we've seen manufacturing leave this country. We had a glass manufacturer leave a couple years ago, and but they were able to replace those jobs with more college jobs. So that's what they do. So it's there. It's everywhere. And we see this filter through. Again, I'm going back to the defaults and the auto loans. The first thing that people will give up is usually their health insurance. You know, then they'll go into their cars, because usually most people need an automobile to get to and from work. But you'll see more and more things they can't afford to pay. And so they're changing.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Melody Cederstrom. And Melody is, of course, is in the coin business. She provides gold and silver, and, of course, she provides counseling to people as well. Melody, would you like to get your website out and your telephone number?
I sure would. The telephone number is 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And the website is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. And if you'd like to email me, you can use our email if you have any questions, to discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com, discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. Of course, you can always email us from the website also. So, but you know, Dr. Stan, not too long ago, I mean, we hear more and more articles about people, whether they be actors. The one article in particular is a model, some high-paid model or something, didn't want to be paid in U.S. dollars anymore. And maybe the American people need to ask their employers to pay them in gold. you know, or in other currencies. And they might not last long on their job, but it would certainly help to fight the rate of inflation, the true rate.
And, you know, one of the things that really puzzles me, and I haven't quite figured this out yet, but as I read conservative publications, Human Events, and, you know, even various the major newspapers, I see these full-page ads from the United States Mint offering gold coins, you know, at the $5 gold coins. They want about $88 for them. But why is the United States Gold Mint offering, you know, coins which are legal tender? Now, of course, they may only say $5 on them, but, I mean, actually they're selling for $80 or $85 because of the price of gold. They're about, of course, about a tenth of an ounce of gold in them. Why is suddenly the United States Mint pushing legal tender gold coins? Have you ever thought about that and wondered why?
Well, I think if you look closely, I don't believe those ads are truly the U.S. Mint. I believe they use the term and they lead people to believe that there is an association or it is the U.S. Mint, but I do not believe they are the actual Mint, I believe. And you see that popping up everywhere in different, and again, like in different magazines and so forth. And usually these advertisements are loss leaders. They're either loss leaders or they'll do the bait and switch where there's a minimum of which you can buy. And all they are the $5 gold eagle, and which is pretty much the going rate of the price. You know, you might be able to save a dollar two, or, you know, and usually they will limit them to 10 per new customer. So that's what they're doing. They're fishing for new customers. And then you're going to get 80,000 calls a year, and eventually you'll buy something probably at a 50% commission. So you do have to be careful in some of these advertisements. And lots of them, I have customers call me about them, and it's difficult to comment on them until I see the actual ad. But usually I can find the areas of which is very gray, and, you know, then I can be a little more specific on it. But also there's been a lot of information, a lot of reports where the Treasury ran out of gold eagles, you know, back a couple of months ago, where they took them off the shelves and they're not minting in them anymore. Well, what it was the gold eagles, the proof coins, and the buffaloes out of the West Point Mint that actually have the W on the coins. And when the price of gold went up so significantly, when we had the big increase in from August up until November, they had to pull the shelf so they could reprice them. And that's all they did, was they repriced them. The regular gold eagles that the mint sell to the dealers, they continued. There was no interruption in them whatsoever. But a lot of the reports made you to believe that they were actually cut off. Now, just recently, because we had the changeover of the year from 07 to 08 on the gold eagles, yes, the Treasury did sell the last of their inventory of 07. So there's a little bit of a gap in this period. It created a little bit of a premium on the gold eagles because of the demand, and because now we're waiting for the 08s to come out. And so the gold eagles, the supply of gold eagles, I mean, you can still buy 07s. It just means the Treasury sold their inventories. That doesn't mean the dealers don't have them. And then, of course, you always have the secondary market of people selling gold eagles, so you can get some older dated gold eagles also. So.
All right, fine. Well, right now let's go to Tony, who's calling from Aptos. Our telephone number again, 1-888-24 Liberty or 464-8295. And the question is, do you really believe that the inflation rate is 2.4 or 3%? Hi, Tony. How are you calling?
Hi, Doc. I don't believe it at all.
Okay.
But I did have a question related to money. Back in the 60s and 70s, insurance salesmen and salespeople used to tell you that the $1934 is worth about 2 cents. What would that $1934 be worth today? Any idea?
Do you have any thoughts on that, Melody?
The $1934 is worth about 2 cents?
No, I don't. I think that may be somewhat of an exaggeration. I think it's probably worth 4 or 5 cents.
Yeah.
Today?
Yeah.
That $1934 would be worth 4 or 5 cents today?
Basically, what happened was the dollar that they that they had, you know, in 1913, it's lost 96% of its value, about 96.5% of its value. So, but we didn't really get too much in the way of inflation by 34. So, certainly the dollar, you know, at that time, you know, has been drastically devalued. From the dollar that we had in the 1930s has lost probably, you know, about 95-94% of its value.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay, fine.
It's worth about a little less than a nickel.
Right. And so if you put your money in the bank or buried it someplace, why, of course, you're going to lose. And that's what's going to happen today. If you think that you're going to be secure in T-bonds, an awful lot of people are, they're putting their money frantically into T-bonds, which is why the value of the bonds is going up and the interest rate on the bonds is going down. But, you know, simply the inflation, you may get, at the present time, 4% interest on your treasury bond, but when you're dealing with 11% inflation, you're losing 7%. Every year, and this is what's happening to the Chinese communists. Chinese communists have $800 to $900 billion in T-bills. And now their reserves are about $1.4 trillion, but they've heavily invested in American treasury bonds, and they're losing value almost every single week. Believe me, the Chinese are pretty smart, and they've seen over the last 3 years the value of their treasury bonds that they hold, U.S. treasury bonds, gone down pretty close to 40%. And they've worked awfully hard for that money, and it's just being taken away from them by inflation. And so now that's why they're trying to go around buying up property, buying up businesses, buying up anything of value here in the United States. And they're doing it very subtly. They don't want people to know. They don't want them to panic. But the Chinese are trying to get out of the American dollar, as is everybody else in the world, except, of course, for the foolish Americans who don't understand inflation. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Melody, what do you, any of your customers getting the T-bonds thinking somehow that's going to protect them?
No. Where we do our marketing, our customers are very much aware. They understand the falling of the dollar, but there are more and more people inquiring and trying to understand. But yet, when you break away from the herd, it's very difficult. And I think that's what we're seeing right now. People are, you know, they're not sure where they want to be. They know something's wrong. They just don't understand. You know, they know they're paying more and more, but they just don't understand why. They don't understand why, you know, they had to switch from steaks to hamburgers. You know, they don't understand why, you know, the prices are continuing to rise. You know, I talked to someone several years ago, you know, that didn't really understand what was going on, and, you know, high prices, they were thinking, like, with the home prices, was a sign of prosperity. You know, that it's good that prices are rising, and that it's a good thing. And so there's just a lot of confusion out there, but they are gradually coming over, but we certainly have not seen the general populace yet come to the point where they're ready to protect their finances and their preserve their wealth through gold and silver.
And, you know, in times of inflation, you have to be in something that holds its value. You do want to invest in property? Well, of course, if you already have property, that's one thing. But if you're going to go out and buy a home or commercial buildings at the present time, why, chances are the value on those is going to go down. It's anticipated that the values of home, private homes and commercial property is going to go down 30 to 40% in the next couple of years. So if you're putting your money into that, why, you have a guaranteed losses to begin with. What can you put your money in that you're sure is going to go up? Is the stock market be sure to go up? I don't think so at all. I think it's being kept up artificially by the Working Group on Financial Matters, and of course it's also known as the Plunge Protection Team, and it simply manipulates the stock market and manipulates commodity prices as well. So, I mean, really, traditionally, down through the centuries, Gold and silver are the only thing that have preserved their value. And you can just study ancient times, from ancient Greece to ancient Rome, you know, down through the Middle Ages, and through Florence, what happened in Florence, what happened in Venice, when they tried these same sorts of phony monetary systems. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and let's go to Marshall, who's calling us from Idaho. What part of Idaho are you living in, Marshall?
The extreme northern panhandle, Pastor Stan, not far from Spokane, Washington.
All right, fine. So you're hearing us then on the Spokane station?
We are.
Okay, very good.
Well, I just find it interesting as I listen, especially in our local area, even in our church, most people just don't have a grasp of what's happening to their savings, to their income. They figure that as long as their 401k is gaining 7 to 8% a year, why they're in grand shape for retirement. And
But the trouble is that with inflation, they're losing 3% a year, and probably they'll be losing, you know, 5 to 7% by next year.
Oh, at least, maybe more. And, you know, we just had a financial seminar in our church, and as I tried to explain that if your savings and what you put away is in dollar-rated instruments, as you just said, you're losing every single month. And, you know, I see here a housing bubble. Because we live in a beautiful part of the country and so on, it's a desirable place to live. We've had a lot of out-of-state money come here, people who are very affluent, who have sold their homes to other places, and they come here, and it's artificially pushed up the price of real estate here. But it's to the point where the manufacturing jobs we had here, we used to be a timber and mining-based economy, and due to environmental terrorism and falsified environmental concerns, we have no timber industry. We used to have five area mills right here where I live that each of them employed between 400 and 900 people apiece. We're down to two mills, and one of them's only working one shift instead of three shifts, and the other mill only employs about 150 people. So you say, well, that's just mill jobs. Well, as mill jobs trickle down, there's the log truck drivers, there's the choker setters, there's the timber haulers, there's the support businesses for that industry. Those jobs are gone. We had mining, and thanks to environmental concerns and so on, the mining industry here is dead. And while they say, oh, but we have X number of jobs being created, they are not livable wage jobs. They are service-related jobs. They are jobs cleaning motel rooms, flipping burgers at McDonald's, working at the local Walmart. They are not livable wage jobs. And the young people that are coming out of high school today, the cost of living here is totally beyond their grasp. There are not jobs to support them. There's no possible way they could ever hope to own a home.
And I think this, Marshall, you're finding this all across the country. Mm-hmm. There is a planned program to lower our living standards and to disseminate the wealth of this country to other nations. That's covered in the Earth Charter, which everybody should read and have. What you really need to do is get a copy of the Earth Charter. Try to get the people at your church to understand what's going on. We have a great little pamphlet called The Hiss, What You Should Know About Money. And then, of course, we have I Talk on the Financial Tsunami. You need to get them to begin to think squarely about what's going on. Most financial planners are not going to give you the truth. What are your thoughts, Melody?
Well, I agree. But, you know, it's so difficult for people to go against the herd. I've been told many a times, well, you know, I'm going to stay there because these, you know, financial planners, they're the big name companies, and we're going to stay there. If they go, well, then I guess, you know, I'm not going to be alone. And it's amazing the comfort that they receive from being with the group. And even though the group's going over the cliff, I guess they're willing to do that too. And it's difficult. It's very difficult. But then you also have to remember, you're right, about all these jobs. It's across the country where these areas, for one reason or another, where they're losing their jobs. And you're right, it is planned, but you have to, a lot of these jobs anymore are government jobs. These people aren't going to see the time of day. You know, they get their normal raises, they get their health care, they get their, you know, they get all their vacations and everything, and even though they are affected by inflation, but you know, you do have a lot of government jobs, and so you do have a small group of people that are waking up, but probably not to the degree that need to, but they will.
Marshall, all we could just suggest is just keep talking in a nice, quiet manner. Don't sound frantic at all.
Mm-mm.
You asked more questions than anything else. What do you think about the progressive fall in the value of the dollar in relationship to other currencies? What impact is that going to have? What impact will it have when China starts to divest itself of American dollars when they hold, you know, 80 or 90, you know, billion dollars of American, I said 800 and 900 billion dollars in American currency? I mean, what happens if the rest of the world starts to dump dollars? What happens if we lose the reserve status, the American dollar? Ask questions. Try to get people to think. That's the best way to reach them, I think. What do you think?
I agree. And reading materials are so important.
And if people understood the history of money, they would be frightened to death. Hey, Marshall, thank you so very much for calling us.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Good night. God bless. Well, Melody, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
That hour went by very quick.
It surely did. And always enjoyable.
Thank you. I just encourage the listeners to call, and if they can, do what they can to preserve their wealth by purchasing gold and silver. And you can call Discount Gold and Silver at 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. And we do things a little bit differently. We work with the individuals and what the gold and silver products are suitable for the customer. We don't sell, you know, one type of coin to everybody, because we believe perhaps that one type of coin doesn't fit someone else's needs or what their investment objective is. I think we can all come to the conclusion that gold is a great hedge against inflation. Sometimes it's not dollar for dollar, but over a long period of time, you can certainly do better holding gold than you can with the dollars that today are worth about a little less than a nickel. So you can visit the website at discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. That is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. And there's lots of reading material on the website. There's archive programs that you can listen to. And we are trying to begin just a little newsletter that if you can sign up by email that we'll send out, so you can sign up for that. And so it's if you have access to the computer, make sure you go there. But always give us a call, and we'll work with you on a personal basis and to see what you're already holding, to see where your investment's at, and see how you can begin to preserve your wealth. And if you're adding to your portfolio, we'll take a look at what you're already holding. And we're not an advocate of trading coins, but sometimes you can adjust your portfolio to where you can have an opportunity to achieve better results in the coins that you're holding. There's a lot of misinformation on the various products out there, on the various coins. And so, you know, we'll try to adjust it so that you get the best results with your gold and silver.
All right, fine. Well, certainly our guest has been Melody Cederstrom. We'll be just talking about the fact that down through the ages, the one thing that has held its value have been precious metals. And certainly if you see what's happening to gold recently and to silver recently, there's certainly a long way ahead of inflation. In fact, gold and silver over the last year or so have done extremely well, and I anticipate they're going to do a great deal better in the coming months and years. And certainly as we see the demise of the dollar, maybe you're not actually gaining any value at all, but at least you're not losing, as you will when you're in fixed currencies. Well, Melody, one more time, let's get out your telephone number and your website.
That's 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188, and the website is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net.
God bless you, and we'll talk
God
to you again
you too,
next
Dr.
time.
God bless you, Dr. Stan. Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, that was Melody Cedarstrom, and of course, this is some time when I just want to mention my little pamphlet on the history of money, which you should know about money. It's inexpensive, but it gives you the background of what happened in ancient Greece and ancient Rome and what's going on today. I think my talk on the financial tsunami, it's on a DVD. You'll find it fascinating. There's a syllabus that goes with that. Explains M1, M2, all of these phrases, where the gold of the United States is, where it is kept. And it's all kept, the American gold and the gold of many other countries is actually kept at the Federal Reserve Bank in New York City. And there is gold there. But, of course, it is simply moved around on pallets. And when you hear that the this bank sold so many tons of gold, I mean, it wasn't picked up and carted some other place. It is all artificial to keep the prices down because they're playing games with our minds. They do that by artificially manipulating the stock market through the Plunge Protection Team, the Working Group on Financial Matters, authorized under the Reagan administration and now used to enrich the pockets of the bankers, because they know if the market's going to go up or down on a specific day. Have you ever noticed that sometimes the market will be down all day long, and then in the last 30 minutes suddenly orders come in from the Cayman Islands and the market just ends up 100 or 200 higher than it was before? It's all manipulated. Understand that, ladies and gentlemen. They're not being honest with us. They can't be, because we have an elite group that rules the country. You need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to watch our DVD, The Forbidden Secret. There is a secret that's been around for 5,000 years. And, of course, we are living in the most exciting times in history as the world moves away from sovereign nations towards a one world government with a one world religion. And this is all about the destruction of Christianity. This is why you're not hearing them talk about the birth of Jesus Christ in the Christmas season. They don't even want to say Merry Christmas. They want to talk about Happy Holidays or Happy Honda Days or whatever it would be. What about the nativity scenes on the front of the churches? Everything is to destroy our faith in Christianity. Many of our churches have changed both the message and the music of the church. Are you listening to the radio and hearing those wonderful old Christmas hymns? Well, a few places you will. Our little station still plays Christmas songs, but you have to understand there's a conspiracy against God. When you understand that, so much of what's going on really begins to make sense. So we're headed towards a new world order, a new world religion, and a new world leader. Who's the new world leader? Well, you need to get the DVD by Constance Cumby, The Emergence. Because if you read the occult literature, as I do, Share Magazine, and the little pamphlet called The Emergence, put out by the Terra Center, which is an occult organization, they will tell you that the new world leader is ready to appear. And you need, of course, to be aware of what's happening. And, of course, this is why we hope you go to our website of RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And you pull down our material and watch our DVDs and get other people listening to our radio programs. Join the Radio Liberty family and help us if you possibly can. We want to maintain our network of stations out across America where at least for a few minutes every week people are hearing the truth. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. And then pray for America, pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Until Monday, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Arthur Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And we need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guests. And, well, for the next hour, our guest is going to be Mr. William Grigg, who was formerly the senior editor for the New American Magazine, and today writes extensively, has a radio programs that he's on regularly, and he is, of course, doing everything he can to educate the American people about what is really going on. Now, I find that William is one of certainly the most articulate of people on talk radio today. We're pleased to have him with us on a regular basis. Mr. William Grigg, how are you doing tonight, William?
I'm doing very well. How are you this evening, Doctor?
I'm doing fine. How is the flu doing?
Well, the flu isn't doing so well, and as a result, I'm doing much better than I was yesterday.
All right, fine. Well, what are we going to talk about this evening?
I think it would be a really good idea to talk a little bit this evening, as we have on previous occasions, about the effective abolition of habeas corpus, and specifically a case that went to the Supreme Court for argument on Wednesday. We won't, of course, hear until sometime next year as to how it turned out. But this is the case of, and I'm sure I'm going to butcher the name, Bomadieni versus Bush, and it involves six individuals who've been held in Guantanamo Bay for the better part of 6 years now. And at issue in this case is the question of whether the Military Commissions Act, which was passed a little more than a year ago, is constitutional. And the Military Commissions Act effectively abolished the right of habeas corpus, or rather, the habeas corpus guarantee. And we've discussed it on previous occasions. I think it would be a good idea to review briefly what that entails. Habeas corpus is a Latin term which means present the body, the live body in this case, of somebody who is a criminal suspect. And the habeas corpus principle dictates that government cannot summarily imprison an individual without charging him formally with a crime and arranging for his trial. The government has to justify, in other words, the imprisonment of an individual, whether you're talking about temporary detention, pretrial detention, or you're talking about permanent imprisonment. There has to be some standard that the government meets in order to justify depriving an individual of liberty. The individual in question simply can't be consigned in perpetuity to a dungeon without some kind of legal recourse. This is a right which goes back into the tenebrous mists of antiquity, and it was first clearly articulated in the Magna Carta, which was issued in 1215. It was one of the guarantees of liberty extracted from King John by the barons at Runnymede when they wrote the Magna Carta. And so this is almost 800 years old, this particular guarantee of due process, and it is the foundation of the entire concept of due process for individuals. I contend, and a number of other people believe, I believe Thomas Jefferson was among that number, that the habeas corpus guarantee is more important as a foundational guarantee of rights than even the Bill of Rights to the Constitution. Because if you don't have habeas corpus, the government can simply lock you away indefinitely.
But of course, I think the significant thing about Thomas Jefferson, he said that non-citizens still had that right, that somebody in our country, anybody in our country, not in some other country, but in our country, had the right to habeas corpus. And this is what the Bush administration has deprived these people that they've kidnapped and brought to Guantanamo of the right. These people are on American soil. And if we can take away the right of aliens to habeas corpus, it's only a very, very short period. They take away the right of American citizens, as they did with Padilla. And they certainly are establishing the precedent to take away the right of habeas corpus from anyone they want to in the name of, well, fighting terrorism.
Well, the principle that Thomas Jefferson talked about regarding habeas corpus that you correctly touched on, Dr. Stan, is much broader than most people appreciate. The idea is that it is a fundamental right of every individual who is within the claimed jurisdiction of the United States government to have a habeas corpus proceeding in order for the suspect, to challenge the conditions of his detention. The only exception to this, quite frankly, has to do with POWs who are captured on a battlefield during the course of a declared war by the United States. That's a separate track that falls under the aegis of the Uniform Code of Military Justice, and of course the Geneva Conventions, which the United States signed in good faith, and which would compose a part of what the Constitution in Article 1 calls the Law of Nations. So you're either a POW captured in the course of a war, or you're a criminal suspect, and there's no room for a tertium quid. There's no third option here. You have to be one or the other. If you're a terrorist suspect, then you're a criminal suspect, and you have the entire suite of due process guarantees that the Constitution extends and ratifies, including the habeas corpus guarantee. A lot of people contend that terrorist suspects are uniquely depraved and uniquely dangerous, and it's a national security issue when you're talking about recognizing and abiding by the principles of due process. The terrorist suspects belong to criminal syndicates, unless, of course, they're attached to sovereign governments. If they are part of the intelligence agency of a recognizable government, then what you should do, if the government in question is not going to cooperate with the extradition of a terrorist suspect for trial, quite frankly, is declare war on that government. And that creates a situation where you can hold those people as POWs with, once again, all of the guarantees of status and individual protections that come with the POW designation. Excuse me for a second. I'm still wrestling a little bit with the vestiges of that cold and flu. What's happening right now with respect to the detainees at Guantanamo, the Bush administration is trying to say, and they consider themselves to be exquisitely clever in saying so, that because Guantanamo Bay is located in Cuba, it is not part of the United States. It's part of the government of Fidel Castro's Cuba. Rather, it is under the jurisdiction of Fidel Castro's Cuba. And as such, the Constitution doesn't apply there, which, of course, is nonsense, because the habeas corpus guarantee, and this, once again, is a principle that Jefferson, Thomas Jefferson, recognized. The habeas corpus guarantee is extended anywhere the government claims jurisdiction. Anybody who falls under the jurisdiction of the United States government has that guarantee. But what happened is that the Bush administration tried by executive decree to repeal habeas corpus protections and Geneva.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is William Craig, and he's pointing out that what the Bush administration has tried to do is to repeal the habeas corpus protection, you know, that is certainly available to every American citizen and every non-citizen. You can't arrest somebody in this country for being here illegally and put them in prison without giving them a hearing so that, you know, at least this charge has been brought against them. That's what habeas corpus is all about. The government has to act responsibly with everyone, citizen, non-citizen. You know, a POW, and once the POW is brought here and put in Guantanamo under American authorization or American authority, then that individual is entitled to habeas corpus. Because if you can suspend it for them, then you will eventually be able to suspend it for American citizens. And there's some people who really do believe that these laws get in the way of criminal procedures. They do not care about laws. They want to be able to do what's expedient and to use these laws against anyone they consider their enemy, citizen or non-citizen. So go right ahead.
Yeah. The key point here is that the Constitution creates a system in which what government can do is defined by the purposes and the explicit grants of power in the Constitution. In other words, the question is not to whom the rights belong. The question is, under what circumstances can the government do certain things? We don't have a system in which rights are extended to people as a result of their status or as a result of their membership in some collective group, including that collective group that would be citizens of the United States. We have a system where we impart to government certain limited, carefully defined, and revocable powers to be exercised only under certain conditions. And the habeas corpus guarantee is intended to restrict the government's ability to hold somebody indefinitely. It doesn't matter who that person is. If the government is going to hold somebody, it has to justify the detention of that individual. If you abrogate that principle, that it imperils not only the rights of aliens who are considered to be enemy combatants or terrorist suspects, it imperils the rights of everybody over whom the government exercises those powers. The Bush administration tried to create that system by executive fiat. This didn't work out very well because the court started to rebel, and when this particular court, which is heavily biased in favor of the Republican Party and its agenda, and that's not a good thing because the Republican Party is not a constitutionalist party, it's not even conventionally conservative, when this particular court finds these claims of powers indigestible, you know that the Bush administration went way too far. And so last year, shortly before the midterm elections, when it was clear the Republican Party was most likely going to lose its control of Congress, the Republican-dominated Congress passed the Military Commissions Act, one section of which explicitly repeals the habeas corpus guarantee in terms of permitting people who are held as suspected terrorists or what are designated unlawful enemy combatants from having some kind of legal recourse to challenge the conditions of their detention. There was a mechanism set up where their status would be reviewed by the CSRT, the Combat Status Review Tribunal, which is a military body impaneled by the Secretary of Defense and which is ultimately accountable to the President. In other words, it's not a judicial body at all. It's part of the executive branch of the United States, and as such, it's completely spurious from a constitutional perspective. The Constitution does not permit the federal government to create courts apart from the Article III mechanism where the Supreme Court would be the ultimate court of appeal. The MCA, Military Commissions Act, and this tribunal system would provide an avenue of review by one federal court, but ultimately the President would have the ability to set aside the findings of that court. So the President would be exercising a judicial function, which is, of course, impermissible. That's a blending of two completely independent branches of government that's completely improper. That's, I think, much worse than FDR's court packing scheme, because FDR didn't suggest that he should make the President himself the ultimate appellate judge. He simply said that he should be able to expand the membership of the Supreme Court so as to pack it with judges who are favorable to his agenda. What the Bush administration has done basically is turned the President of the United States into the ultimate appeals judge for this military tribunal system. So there are a number of people who have been held in Guantanamo for several years, never charged with a crime, never clearly implicated in terrorism, who are challenging in the Supreme Court their detention and challenging the constitutionality of the Military Commissions Act. One of the separate, there are a couple of separate cases that have been folded together. One of them deals with six Algerian nationals who were arrested in Bosnia, in Sarajevo, in the former Yugoslavia. They were brought to trial before the Bosnian court that was created with the support of the United States government, funded by the United States government, as well as various European powers. They were exonerated by the court in Sarajevo in January 2002, but immediately after being released by that court, exonerated of terrorism charges, they were arrested by Bosnian police and then turned over to the jurisdiction, the custody of the United States military, and they ended in Guantanamo. That was almost 6 years ago, and they've never been charged with a crime, so they have essentially served a six-year sentence without being formally charged, much less prosecuted. There's another case involving a German citizen of Pakistani ancestry who was 19 years old when he was scooped up in one of these canvases that the U.S. government has promoted where people are offered bounties in exchange for basically turning in anybody they want to finger as a terrorist. And there have been hundreds of people sent to Guantanamo Bay under those circumstances, people who had probably nothing at all to do with Islamic radicalism of any kind, who just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time where they made the wrong kind of enemies, and so they were turned over for bounties. This one particular individual was 19 years old in 2002, and he was turned over to the custody of the United States government. Within a very brief period of time, the review process that was in place at the time essentially acquitted him of involvement in terrorism, but he is still in the custody of the United States government in Guantanamo Bay, in spite of the fact that the U.S. government promised the German government, Germany being a close ally to the United States, that they would turn him over to the German government to be repatriated. These are just some examples of the kinds of things that can happen under the system.
Well, I think another thing that's very important, William, is the fact that hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who've been taken to Guantanamo and tortured and mistreated
yep.
and humiliated have then been released saying, oh, shucks, there was nothing wrong with them. Oh, shucks, what we made another mistake here. No, certainly there's certainly a lot of people there still. But
yeah.
The thing is that they put a lot of people in there that they never should have, simply because they've been paying large rewards for anybody who would finger somebody. And if you didn't like somebody, maybe he was going out with your girlfriend, or you accuse him of being a terrorist and he ends up at Guantanamo. Certainly there are some terrorists out there.
Yeah.
There are some wicked people who hate America.
Unquestionably.
And we certainly want to prevent them from going out and committing crimes against our country. But at least these people ought to be able to have a hearing before a legitimate court. And if they are terrorists, identify them as such and try them as such, mm-hmm. and confine them to prison as such.
Exactly.
But the way we're treating these people is doing nothing but creating hatred for America, not only among the victims, but among their families. Many of the families don't even know where these people are. And even more than that, we're creating hatred against America all throughout the world. And when American soldiers are taken by foreign countries, don't you think they're going to be submitted to the same sorts of torture and inhumane treatment? And how could we possibly object? Where is the outcry from the American people? Why, of course, it is deafening in its silence. And men and women become accomplices to the evils
exactly.
they fail to oppose.
Exactly. I mean, we're convicting ourselves in the court of public opinion. We should not be indifferent to world opinion, although we shouldn't be governed by it. That's a very quick parenthetical comment I'd like to make. You go back and you read the Declaration of Independence, it talks about addressing our grievances to a candid world on the assumption that we owed it to the studied opinion of mankind to justify separating the colonies from the British Empire. In other words, it's a good idea to take into account the fact that we have to live in a world of other separate sovereign nations. And it's a good idea to cultivate goodwill, unless, of course, we simply cannot do so. We shouldn't have entanglements, enduring entanglements with nations. We shouldn't have enduring antipathies that are the result of arrogance or lawless behavior on the part of our own government. And when you take these people into custody in Guantanamo Bay and hold them for many, many years, often mistreat them to the point of torture or outright torture, and then send them back to their countries without so much as an apology, what you're doing is you're creating a laboratory that is more or less guaranteed to be producing terrorists rather than reducing the threat. I've said it before and I'll say it again. What's going on at Gitmo is a singularly lousy way to protect us from terrorists, but it's a singularly efficient way to create more terrorists. And I think that there are people who are intelligent enough to realize that and are either pathologically indifferent to that fact or they're actually trying to create more trouble because government thrives by creating problems that justify the increase of its powers. The old process Frederick Bastiat referred to as creating the poison and the antidote in the same laboratory.
Well, let me just comment that, 10 years ago in the Muslim countries throughout the world, this radical form of Islam was not embraced by the vast majority of people.
Yeah.
It was really not a problem. But you were to go into Egypt, into Libya, into Morocco, Algeria, if you were to go into certainly Saudi Arabia or Kuwait or Pakistan or Turkey today, and you were to hold a free, open vote, the vast majority of the people would vote for the radical form of Islam because of their fact that they are furious with America for what we've done, invading their countries over there without justification. And the terrible treatment we have meted out to the prisoners at both Abu Ghraib and at Guantanamo, and we've allowed those pictures to be shown throughout the world on Islamic television, which is really a front for the British intelligence. We are doing everything we can to antagonize the rest of the world. And this radical form of Islam, not existent 10 to 15 years ago, and now, of course, has gripped the very heart and soul of the Muslim people. The end result of American foreign policy, how could you do anything that stupid unintentionally? Why would you try to inflame the entire Muslim world against the United States? Pick up the story.
Well, obviously, there are people who want to inflame the Muslim world because by doing so, they'll keep alive a conflict that will increase their power.
We'll be back in just a moment with William Grigg. But ask yourself why. Why? Why?
Well, stupidity can only explain so much, and when stupidity is removed as a possibility, the likely explanations grow even scarier. And so I honestly believe, on the basis of what I've been able to learn through
study and also through on-site conversations when I was in the Muslim world a number of years ago, is that there is an effort and a deliberate intent on the part of certain people to alienate the Muslim world against the West and to create frictions that will eventually generate the sparks that will grow into raging conflicts that create opportunities for the enhancement of the power of government and certain politically connected interests. The thing that I remember vividly when I visited Egypt back in 1994 was the fact that there were a number of people who were faithful Muslims, albeit not radical Muslims of the sort that we're discussing right now. They were not jihadists. They weren't the type of people who lusted to slit the throats of non-believers. They were people who were devout in the Muslim faith, which I believe is a fundamentally mistaken faith. I think that the Muslim faith teaches wrong and damnable things about the identity of God, and that it teaches nothing harmonious to salvation. But that being the case, that's not to say that every Muslim is depraved, and it's not to say that every Muslim harbors ill will toward Christians and Jews. When I was in Egypt talking with a number of people from a number of different countries, not just Egypt, but also places like Pakistan, a number of them were asking me about the foreign policy of the United States. Specifically, this is something that would surprise a lot of people, and I think it's something you and I have touched on before, Dr. Stan. Specifically, the role played by our foreign aid in promoting radical feminism in the anti-natalist philosophy of groups like Planned Parenthood and Marie Stopes International and others who are involved in eugenics, promoting abortion and contraception. And the purpose that took me to Egypt was to attend the UN's Conference on Population Control. And they disseminated a document, the people running that conference, in the final session of that meeting, that called for basically the 190 nation state members of the United Nations to adopt numerical demographic targets that would require the subversion of the traditional family, particularly in the Muslim world. And so through the State Department and the Agency for International Development and this entire apparatus of foreign aid, the United States government was going to be spending tens of millions or hundreds of millions of dollars to dispatch missionaries, if you will, from groups like Planned Parenthood into the Muslim world. And the Muslims that I spoke with were understandably offended by this. You know, how will we presume, how dare we presume to tell these people how they would arrange the domestic affairs? I don't happen to think that conventional practice in the Islamic world in terms of the way that the men are taught to treat women is a good or wholesome thing. There is a lot of misogyny in Islam, but I don't think that it is our calling to try to rearrange what we consider to be defects in the way other people choose to live. And particularly, we should not be doing this in order to either encourage them or to force them to have fewer children. That's certainly something that is not within our jurisdiction. There was a remarkable man on that, I think I might have mentioned him before, by the name of Dr. Majid Khatma. He was a Pakistani living in London. He's a physician. He's an OBGYN. He delivers babies for a living. That's his profession. His avocation is the pro-life cause. He was the head of the Muslim Physicians for Life. And it's interesting that he pointed out that in 1988, when the Scabrous movie, The Last...
We're going to have to hold that. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William was talking about when he had been in Egypt at the population control meeting that was held there and had a chance to talk to many of the Muslims, and suddenly Muslims were furious that the United States had a program of population reduction and wanted to send emissaries into their countries to try to get women to have less, less in the way of children. And then William was talking about a Pakistani OBGYN physician who practiced in London, very strongly pro-life. And what was the point you were trying to make with him?
Well, just by way of a very illustrative side subject here, Dr. Cotton had described how in 1988, when that vile movie, The Last Temptation of Christ, was on display in London, there were only a couple of letters written in the newspapers that criticized that film, and there were only a couple of people out on the streets protesting this broadside of blasphemy against the Christian faith, and they were both Muslims. It was Dr. Cotton and another one of his associates, they didn't know each other, they met each other by standing out in the streets protesting this attack on the name and the image of Jesus of Nazareth. Well, the Muslims do not recognize Jesus as the Savior, as the Messiah, but they consider him to be a prophet, which is why when I would talk with Majid Khatma, he would say, when he'd bring up the name of Jesus, and say, peace be upon him. In other words, he was respectful and worshipful after a fashion, although he doesn't recognize Jesus as his Lord. I certainly wish he would. I mean, that's something that I would wish everybody would do, particularly worthy and estimable people like Habakkuk Khatma. But the point I'm making is that here is somebody who is inclined toward the West, and somebody who is in a very real way promoting what we would call Western values much better than a lot of people who are nominally of the West, certainly better than most of the people who are in our ruling establishment. And I remember a press conference that he held at the Cairo International Conference Center just shortly after the conference began on population control, and the room was packed with journalists from all throughout the Muslim world, all throughout the Persian Gulf, Northern Africa, places like Pakistan. And Dr. Khatma gave a long and impassioned address, and the poll quote from that address that I put in the magazine was the following: for Muslims, God is the only population controller. And the entire room erupted in cheers. All of the Muslim journalists were cheering, and that of course means that they were guilty of a lapse in terms of their clinical separation from the story. I mean, they were making themselves a part of the story, but it did reflect the overall sentiment of the Muslims at that conference. And I came back from that experience really worried. I remember the time I was teaching in Sunday school, and I set aside the lesson I was going to teach that Sunday, the Sunday after I got back from Egypt, and I talked from the 29th chapter of Isaiah, where it talks about how you've made a covenant with death and with hell you're at agreement. And I talked about the implications of UN-supervised population control. And I said, look, I think that within a decade, probably before the end of the decade, but within a decade, we're going to be at war with the entire Muslim world. And it's not necessarily going to be about our policies in the Middle East with respect to the Arab-Israeli dispute or the dispute over the occupied territories, the standoff between the Palestinians and the Israelis. It's not going to be any of these things. It's going to be because of our social policy and the way that we're exporting eugenics and the way that we're getting involved in the intimate details of how these people raise their families. When you imperil somebody's family, that's when that person becomes angry enough to kill you and willing to die in order to defend his family from you.
And
that's
a
human reaction.
I think people have forgotten that a few years ago, Samuel Huntington, a professor of history at Harvard University, wrote a book called The Class of Civilizations, and his basic theme was this. You know, do not, the United States, try to force your values on the Muslim world. Don't try to force democracy on them. Don't try to force your pornography, your loose morals on the Muslim world, or you're going to antagonize them, and there's 1.3 billion of them and only 300 million of you people here in the West. This would be the worst possible thing you could do. And yet that's exactly the policies that our government has followed. Why are we doing everything to antagonize the Muslim world? I believe our leaders want a war with the Muslim world, and I think somebody's got to say that.
Yeah.
We could not be this stupid and intelligent.
Well, obviously. And what I would like to say about this is that we're dealing with a situation that would be akin to finding a pack of feral dogs, tormenting them with sharp sticks, and then letting them out of their pen to go rampaging through the neighborhood. That more or less is a good example, I think, or a good analogy for what our foreign policy has been with regard to the Muslim world for decades.
Amen to that. We're going to be back in just a moment with our special guest, William Grigg. Understand, ladies and gentlemen, you're not being told the truth. American foreign policy is not designed to help the Muslim world. It is designed to antagonize the Muslim world, and we've certainly done a great job of that in Afghanistan and already in every one of the Muslim countries in the Near East and in the Middle East. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Pick up the story there, William.
I don't think that most people in this country appreciate the fact that our relations with the Arab and Muslim world had been relatively good until relatively recently. I mean, obviously, during the early 19th century, the administration of Thomas Jefferson, we, like most nations of the world, had some conflicts with the Barbary Coast pirates. You know, the Bay of Algiers was running a racket where people would show up and they'd be taken into custody and they'd have to pay ransom if you were involved in shipping. You have to pay ransom in order to get your ships and your crews and what cargo you could save out of the hands of the Barbary pirates. So we had some nasty situations developed with the Barbary pirates that were not driven by religion. They were driven by criminal opportunism, by a group of people who were, in a classic sense, pirates of the open seas. Piracy was a big issue in the 1600s, 1700s elsewhere as well. And that was an outgrowth of the nastiness that unfolded because of the 30 Years' War. You had privateers who became outright pirates as a matter of state policy, as you had the wars of religion raged through Europe, and much of the colonial empires of the time, such as they were. And so, you know, you had piracy that was driven not only by Muslim opportunism, but Christian opportunism as well. And so we had some trouble with the Barbary pirates that made for some high drama. But it didn't evolve into an outright clash of civilizations. In the 1820s, the Greeks, who were dominated by the Ottoman Turks, wanted to fight a war of independence. There were many people in the United States who wanted the American government to get involved directly in trying to bring about the independence of the oppressed Christians who were living under the heel of the Ottoman Turks. That's a worthy goal, but of course the policy of our founding generation was to avoid entanglement in foreign quarrels to the extent that we possibly could. And so it was in the context of the Greek Christian drive for independence that John Quincy Adams gave that famous Independence Day oration, in which he talked about the fact that America goes not abroad in search of monsters to destroy. You know, wherever the banner of liberty is unfurled, there our sentiments will be. But we will not enlist in the cause of foreign independence, because that's simply not our calling. He was talking specifically about a conflict between Muslim and Christian in the Ottoman realm, in the Ottoman Empire. And that was a wise policy. We stayed more or less faithful to that policy until the beginning of the 20th century, when we found ourselves involved in a war in the Philippines. It was a nasty affair.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with William Grigg. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's William Grigg, former senior editor of the New American Magazine, and now a commentator and a radio show, a host. And but I want William now to give out his blog site,
right.
So you'll know how to get hold of the very excellent material he has up on the internet.
Well, I really appreciate that. In order to read what I have to say, the easiest way to accomplish that is to go to the homepage of the right source. That's a news commentary page that I helped to edit. The URL is www.rightsourceonline.com. That's one word, rightsourceonline.com. Although it's entitled The Right Source, you don't use the when you're trying to find it. It's just rightsourceonline.com. If you go to that homepage, at the very top, in the left-hand corner, you'll see my photograph. And in the box containing my photograph, there are two hyperlinks. Go to the one furthest to the right. It will take you to my daily blog, which is entitled Pro Libertate. And it's not a blog in the same sense that many people would use that format. Of course, a blog is a weblog or a web diary. Many people use it as a way of jotting down random, briefly stated reflections on matters of passing interest. I don't use the blog for that purpose. I use it to publish between 4 and 6 times a week a fully researched commentary piece. They're all commentary pieces because they're all generously infused with my own personal opinions. But I try to validate and document what I have to say, and I make copious use of hyperlinks for that purpose. Or in the case of a research piece involving a book, I will often use page references so that people can go back and ratify, verify what I have said. But the essays are anywhere from 900 words to 2,000 words or longer. And they're intended to be investigative opinion pieces. it's polemical journalism, but it's polemical journalism that intends to be investigative in nature. In other words, what I try to do, as I've said before, is to get out the scalpel and get beneath the skin of a story to find out what's really going on. And to the extent that I can do so, I still practice shoe leather journalism. I still go out and cover events. I call people up on the telephone. I harangue people that way. I solicit things by email. I talk to people directly. And so what I try to do with the blog is to conduct investigative journalism of a type that's, you know, pretty familiar in conventional journalism, just using the modern immediacy of the blogosphere to do that. That's the Pro Libertate blog. Pro Libertate is a title which reflects the single-minded focus of the blog. The phrase means for freedom in Latin. And everything I write is a product of my all-encompassing obsession with human liberty. And my new book, it's entitled Liberty in Eclipse, The War on Terror and the Rise of the Homeland Security State, will be shipping on December 17th. And as soon as I have more information and specifics as to how your listeners can obtain a copy or how to get a quantity of those books to you, Dr. Stan, I'll make you aware of that. It will be available through the website, too.
All right, very good.
But I've been talking before the break about the fact that until relatively recently, the relations between the United States and the Muslim world have been actually fairly good. Our first real conflict with the Muslim world came in the Philippine counterinsurrectionary war that started in 1899 after the United States decided that it did not want to grant independence to the Republic of the Philippines under Aguinaldo, who had been the anti-Spanish guerrilla leader. The 1898 Spanish-American War was a pure act of smash-and-grab imperialism by Washington, and it involved taking Puerto Rico and part of Cuba, or taking Cuba, basically all of Cuba, a few other possessions there in the Caribbean, and also the Philippines. The Philippines were supposed to be a coaling station, a place where our naval forces could replenish their supplies in order to go into the Far East and open up trade routes and commercial deals by force. In other words, it wasn't really free trade they were talking about. It was supposed to be corporatist trade that would be carried out more or less at the point of a bayonet rather than with an open hand of friendship in the interest of mutual benefit to both parties. But in order to pacify the Philippines, they had put down the insurrection of a number of different groups on the island, including the Moros, including the indigenous Muslims. And it was in the course of that war that you first had the United States actually involved in what we would now call counter-insurrectionary warfare, where you had Jack Pershing and other generals doing some really brutal and horrible things, including waterboarding. That's something that not many people appreciate. A number of decades later, the Imperial Japanese did horrible things to the Americans and the Filipinos when the Imperial Japanese took over the islands after MacArthur was chased off the island. We know about the Bataan Death March. We know that there were Japanese commandants who were convicted of war crimes because they used the same form of controlled drowning that we call waterboarding as a way of dealing with suspected insurgents and partisans and POWs who supposedly had valuable intelligence. Now, they were convicted of using a method that is now being used by the Bush administration as an interrogation technique in, among other places, Guantanamo Bay. But actually, the first people to use waterboarding, it was called the water cure at the time, were the American counterinsurgent forces during the war of you have to call it the War of Suppression in the Philippines back in the early years of the 20th century. And this was all a result of the same kinds of ambitions we're seeing right now. There was this imperial drive to conquer the Philippines, use it as a way station towards a larger, grander presence in the Far East and Asia. But that was really the first time that we had had any kind of conflict with the Muslim world. After we got involved stupidly, criminally got involved in the First World War, basically the United States, by entering the war, broke a stalemate that could have led, had the stalemate persisted, it could have led to a negotiated peace that would have preserved Christian Europe. That's what the Pope at the time, Pope Benedict at the time, wanted to have a stalemate persist so that the European powers would back away from the brink. You know, they were basically bogged down along the Western Front. They got bogged down there after the first couple of months of the war for over 2 years, 2.5 years, until the Americans got involved, broke the stalemate, and then that led to a situation where people like Colonel House, the arch-conspirator, one of the arch-conspirators of history, Colonel House and Woodrow Wilson, could get out a map of the world and start arbitrarily creating these new nation-states on the principle of what they call self-determination. That's how we ended up with all these cute little kingdoms over in the Middle East, places like Iraq, that was basically the result of a cartographer's conspiracy. And you created all these little fractious, truculent little Muslim principalities, told them that they had the right of self-determination, and out of that came this radical hybrid that is now modern pan-Islamic nationalism, the idea that each of these countries has to be a Muslim nation-state, and they're part of the Umar, the grand nation-state that is the Islamic world. That's largely a product of Western meddling in that part of the world as a result of the United States getting involved in World War One, breaking up the Ottoman Empire, and deciding that they were going to redraw the map of the world. And still, we weren't having a whole lot of difficulty with the Muslim world until after World War II. There were a couple of things that happened there. The one that everybody talks about is the United Nations creating the nation-state of Israel and bringing about a series of events that led to the dispossession of the Palestinian Arabs, which, of course, is a big issue. But another big issue was that FDR decided that he was going to create a kingdom, a petro-monarchy, in the sandy territory of Saudi Arabia. And so we ended up with a situation where the West basically created Saudi Arabia, which is sort of at the fountainhead of all this Islamic radicalism, the militant, intemperate, intolerant Wahhabi brand of Sunni Islam that really is involved in most of the international terrorism, including Al-Qaeda. And that happened as a result, once again, of Western meddling in that part of the world and the ambitions of a certain number of people who wanted to liaise with the sheikhdom, the desert sheikhdom, so as to cultivate and exploit the oil resources there. But what really, I believe what really set up the modern impasse with the Islamic world was when we started, the federal government, specifically the CIA, started going about in the Muslim world and overthrowing governments that didn't meet with the approval of Washington and London, the first being the government of Mossadegh in Iran in 1953. Whatever you think of Mossadegh, the problem with deposing him is that the CIA went in and spent huge amounts of money to cultivate the most radical elements of the Islamic clergy and turn them against the government and turn them in favor of the Shah. And once the Shah was in power in 1953, these radical imams continued to foment discontent and the ferment of their ideology that began with the CIA seed money in 1953 eventually resulted in many of these same radical clerics in 1978 turning against the Shah and bringing the Ayatollah Khomeini to power. And so you have the same people who had been funded by the CIA about 25 years earlier helping to bring into power this revolutionary, radical, America-hating, anti-Western cleric who became the functional equivalent in the Shiite Muslim world to what the Saudi monarchy had been in terms of funding the radical Sunni version of Islam. And so I think that really, if you take a look at what happened with the Muslim world, the turn of the Muslim world against the West, the subversion of the Iranian government in 1953 really was a key event. And that led to the fall of the Shah in 1978. And from 1979, we've been at daggers drawn with most of the Shiite world, and particularly with the government in Iran, which is admittedly a horrible government. And then the other thing that happened that really created the impetus for anti-American terrorism, I believe, was when we stupidly got involved in a peacekeeping mission to Lebanon in 1982. For the life of me, I don't know what we were trying to accomplish apart from getting the United States entangled in the affairs of the Middle East in ways that were guaranteed to create antagonism toward the United States. Everybody talks about the seizure of the hostages in Iran as the beginning of a radical Islamic war against the United States. They also talk about what happened in 1983 with the bombing of the Marine barracks in Lebanon. And what they don't understand, of course, is that these things are not events that simply arose spontaneously from a flat and featureless social terrain. These had predicates. They had antecedents. You know, in the case of what happened in in Tehran with the seizure of the American hostages who were held in horrible situation, in a horrible situation for 444 days, that had its roots in meddling that the United States had been involved in going back at least to 1953. In the case of the Marine barracks bombing in 1983, you have to ask yourself, why were the Marines there in the first place? Not only why were they at the bottom of a draw where they had the low ground and they were surrounded by the high ground, and they were left in a situation where they're completely exposed and vulnerable, and the sentries didn't even have loaded weapons. It's almost as if they were being dangled out there to be massacred to begin with. It's like our planes being lined up wingtip to wingtip in Pearl Harbor, you know, the same kind of deal, I think. But why were they there in the first place? What were they accomplishing apart from getting involved in a completely impenetrable mess in Lebanon? Nobody could keep the factions straight, much less know who was our friend, who was our foe. But these events were the first time that we were actually in conflict with the Muslim world, and it pretty much went downhill from there. But the point I'm making here is that it's not as if we would necessarily be having the problems we're having right now with radical Islam absent the foreign policy, the needlessly invasive and truculent foreign policy which has alienated them against us, and also, of course, the meddling that I talked about in terms of getting involved in cultivating radical feminism and cultural degeneracy in the Muslim world. They don't want any part of that. I don't know why any decent person would want to have any part of it. And then, of course, you have the other element here, which you and I have discussed before, Dr. Stan, which is the fact that the same CIA has been funding, since at least the late 1940s, early 1950s, groups such as the Muslim Brotherhood, who were basically the seedbed from which sprang Al-Qaeda. And they were funding them well into the 1990s. And even up to weeks or months before 9/11, you had Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, which was hosting Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, receiving counter-narcotics funds from the CIA and other agencies in the United States government. It's a case of finding exactly the worst combination of policies and supporting them with taxpayer money in ways that were intended, I believe, to bring about the creation of a radical Muslim enemy.
Now, let me just point out, we do carry a book through Radio Liberty called The Devil's Game.
Terrific book.
Devil's Game, which points out exactly what William is saying, and that is that the CIA was financing this whole radical Islamic movement. CIA was instrumental in the creation of an Islamic terrorist organization known as Hamas, and certainly the Muslim Brotherhood. A fascinating book, available from Radio Liberty. Understand nothing, as you've been told, by the controlled media here. Go right ahead, William.
It's not just the Muslim Brotherhood and also groups such as Hamas, which, as you say, was created with the help of the CIA. It was also created with the help of Israeli intelligence, supposedly as a foil to Fatah. And now Hamas is running the Palestinian Authority and involved in all kinds of nastiness that actually threatens the existence of Israel. But you also find groups such as the so-called Kosovo Liberation Army, which is now in charge of that part of Serbia called Kosovo, which is to Serbs a combination of Jerusalem and the Alamo. It's very sacred territory to the Serbs, but it was turned over to the Kosovo Liberation Army, which is a group of just extravagantly nasty people. On the one side, they're descended from the Stalinists. On the other side, they're descended from the Skanderbeg militia that was organized by the Waffen-SS during World War II. They were tightly aligned with Osama bin Laden. They were funded through drug trafficking. Just, you couldn't find a nastier group of people who pretty much represent the distilled essence of pure evil. And they were the people who were being funded and supported by the CIA in the late 1990s, and to whom the United States and the European Union turned over Kosovo after a 78-day bombing campaign against Serbia. Serbia's only crime here, really, in spite of the fact there were some nasty things done by Serbs in Bosnia in the course of a war which has its roots going back centuries. Serbia's only crime, really, was its refusal to turn over that territory to a group of people who were bound and determined to create a statelet that would threaten the existence of Serbia as a nation. And they didn't want to turn over Kosovo, obviously, to a pack of drug-dealing Marxoid terrorists. And so the United States bombed that country in tandem with NATO for 78 days. Serbia is a country that never did anything to threaten us or harm us in any way. They were very pro-American in spite of the fact that they've been ruled by Tito for decades. They were under the heel of a nominal communist government at the time. But they had a Christian population that were being oppressed by their government, and then they were being bombed by the United States in spite of the fact that they were very sympathetic to us. The purpose of this was to turn over Kosovo to a group of drug-dealing terrorists aligned with Osama bin Laden. That's a foreign policy in a microcosm right there.
Hey, really, the thing is so absurd. The average American has no idea that we were constantly funding and helping various groups that were aligned with Osama bin Laden. Why would we do that when Osama bin Laden had declared war on America, said he was going to destroy us? Why was the CIA helping them? Our guest is William Grigg. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program. William, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
I think the most important thing for people to remember here is that if we had been faithful to the wisdom of our founding fathers in terms of how to manage our foreign policy, we'd be having none of these problems. We'd have a different set of problems. I happen to think the problems we would have under those circumstances would be more manageable. If we had heeded the wisdom of Washington, who talked about eschewing permanent alliances, permanent entanglements, permanent antipathies with foreign countries. That was a warning that was reiterated by Thomas Jefferson as well. And most of the founding generation, at least through the 1820s, if we'd obeyed the wisdom of those warnings, we would probably be in a situation right now where we would not be dealing with this prospect of a civilizational war that will go on for decades. We've been told that this is the long war, that it would last at least 50 years, if not 100 years. The institutions that are supposed to protect our liberty are undergoing a fatal metamorphosis right now on the assumption that we are never again going to know normalcy. That's why we're having attacks on habeas corpus. We're talking about abolishing the fundamental due process guarantee in order to accommodate the needs of the government that would be presiding over us during the course of this open-ended war. Justice Stephen Breyer of the Supreme Court now is talking about a compromise position of having the Congress pass a law providing for preventive detention of people. Now, that's what he would do by way of addressing the problem of habeas corpus, have the Congress pass a law that would be what the Revolutionary French called the law of suspects, that would provide for the summary preventive detention of people who are deemed dangerous. That's the compromise position. I mean, we wouldn't do away with habeas corpus. We'd just have habeas corpus guarantee for everybody except those who are subject to preventive detention. That's the kind of a society that we're seeing created now, just 5-6 years after 9/11. Can you imagine what we will look like if we let our rulers get away with dragooning us into a war that would last for decades against an amorphous enemy that they themselves are helping to create?
And they are still in the process. If you really study what's happened in the United States, almost everyone, with only one or two exceptions of all the Muslims who've been tried for terrorism, a homegrown terrorism, have been incited into making ridiculous statements by agent provocateurs. The FBI is out there doing everything they can to try to create terrorists, to encourage terrorism. Why would you do that if we have this terrible threat? Because this terrible threat is as phony as a $3 bill. Yes, there is tremendous antagonism towards America, but here in America, why the FBI is creating most of the terrorist threat. We're out of time. William, thanks for being with us. God bless. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. God bless.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and really, if you'd like to get the book on The Devil's Game, it's available from Radio Liberty. We have another book. It's called See No Evil. It's written by Robert Baer, who was the man who was actually responsible for the motion picture Syriana. They actually used his book, See No Evil, as the basis for that. Now, admittedly, they changed it around a lot, but Robert Baer's book, See No Evil, will point out that on two occasions during the 1990s, the Iraqi military tried to overthrow the wicked Saddam Hussein. And on both occasions, the courageous military officers had made the mistake of contacting the American State Department, which betrayed them, and they were arrested and tortured to death along with their families. That is American foreign policy at work. nothing as it appears to be. Saddam Hussein worked for the CIA all during the 1950s as a professional assassin. We helped bring him to power. We financed him during the 1980s. We bombed, Iraq all during the 1990s. We killed 500,000 Iraqi children and probably 2 million Iraqis during those bombings and as a direct result of the embargo we put on Iraq. And then we invaded Iraq and we've killed another 500,000 to 1 million Iraqis. Ladies and gentlemen, you are responsible. Men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. You need to check and find out if what we're saying is true. You need, of course, to get the book, The Devil's Game, and See No Evil, two books available from Radio Liberty on this subject. You need to get our pamphlets of Foreknowledge 911, inexpensive, three pamphlets based upon our newsletters, certainly our newsletters from August to December of last year, of the year 2006, are important. You need to pull them down from our website at radioliberty.com to realize that they knew exactly what was happening. You can go back and read the article written in 1996 by Richard Haass, who today is the chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations. He was telling us about what was going to happen with the terrorist attacks, the long lines at federal buildings, the long lines at airports, you know, how we were going to have to get the American people to give up their freedom in the name of fighting this terrorist threat in America. 1996, it was all slammed up. They knew exactly what was going to happen. And then Condoleezza Rice, when asked by the 911 commission why they didn't do anything when they knew the attack was coming, she said, we needed an incident. We had to have an incident where people would be willing to give up their freedom. Without that, why we weren't going to take any action. We had to have an incident. Ladies and gentlemen, this is all included. You can actually go to the 911 commission report and read those words, in essence, by Condoleezza Rice. Nothing as it appears to be. We're headed towards a dictatorship. You need to get the information available through Radio Liberty on the Military Commission Act and on the plan police state. We have a syllabus by that title which is available through Radio Liberty. You need to get the information, and then you need to help us get it out, because behind everything going on are secret societies. You need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to watch my talk, The Forbidden Secret, and of course the four tape set or four CD set, The Secret Behind the Secret, to begin to understand the spiritual forces that are at work. You need our three pamphlets on the occult hierarchy. That's the occult hierarchy. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com, that's radioliberty.com, where you can go and for nothing watch our videos, our DVDs. You can listen to our archived radio programs. You can read our newsletters. But we hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family, because we need your help so we can maintain our outreach of almost 60 outlets every single week, as we reach out trying to educate people about the spiritual battle that's taking place today. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Again, our number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack from within today.